I'm Rach, and we're going to read from the Bible now. I'm going to be reading Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 to 12. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means last among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me, so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their home country by another route.
Thanks, Rach. Well, good morning, friends, and happy Christmas. It is great to have you with us this morning, both here in person and for those people who are gathering online. Happy Christmas to you as well. Well, a few days before Christmas, two young brothers were spending the night at their grandparents' house. And when it was time to go to bed, they were very anxious to make sure they were doing just the right thing. And so the two of them knelt down quietly beside their bed to pray. And suddenly, the younger one, in a very, very loud voice, prayed, "Dear Lord, please ask Santa Claus to bring me a PlayStation and a mountain bike and a telescope. Amen!" The older brother leaned over and whacked his brother and said, "What on earth are you doing? God is not deaf." And he said, "I know, but Grandma is." Now, that little joke exemplifies something really interesting about us humans. It is that we will do almost anything we can to get what we want. And now, sometimes that results in incredible achievements. And this has been a year of incredible achievements. And I'm not just talking about COVID vaccines. Humans have stretched their minds and stretched the physical world to further and further capacity in this last year. Did you know that scientists in Finland have created synthetic coffee? It uses 95% less water in production. It expends 95% less carbon emissions. And they say it tastes similar to coffee. Incredible, and it will be on your shelves in 2023, so look out for that. Did you know that the three epidemiologists who were not working on COVID in this last year, they created a vaccine for malaria? Now, about 500,000 people in the world die of malaria every year, and now there is a vaccine with increasing efficacy to protect people across the world. I find that amazing. No more of those little pills you have to take when you go to countries where malaria is rife. And thirdly, I discovered this. Nephrologists, I also discovered what a nephrologist is. That's a kidney doctor. Nephrologists planted a pig kidney into a human body and it worked perfectly with no rejection whatsoever. I find humanity amazing. The things that people are able to do in the world are incredible. We will do almost anything to get what we want. And in many ways, that's what also made this last year perhaps even these last 2 years, so frustrating. We were told again and again, you can't do this, and you can't do that, and you can't go here, and you are locked down, and you are shut out, and you must stay at home, and you're not allowed to. And to be frank, while I understand the need, and while there have been some delightful moments, and while we Australians are all pretty compliant, actually, we sort of did what we were supposed to do, it was pretty darn annoying, right? Because in the world we live in, the song sheet we actually sing from reads, "If I want it, you should not be allowed to stop me. If I want it, you must facilitate me getting this thing. If I want it, you must get out of my way so I can get it. I want to be in control of me and my environment, and no one and nothing is allowed to impinge on what I think or what I'm after." Such that the words of that famous song have even changed now. "All I want for Christmas is me." Now, of course, there's another underlying reality in all of this. For if what we dearly want is to be more and more in control of our lives and ourselves, then we must actually ensure that God is pushed out of the picture. And we heard this narrative through some of the legislation that's been through our state parliament over the last 6 months. The idea of a God who might have something to say about my choices, about my life, about my future, about my powers and my autonomy, well, that God no longer fits in my world. And so to many, God is dead, and if he's not quite there yet, it's time to kill him off. Because without God, we can truly do what we want. Now, I know this is a cheery way to sort of start thinking in a Christmas morning, and you might think I'm too down on our society and culture in this moment, but please hear this. While we might call this the age of the I, well, this is not the first age of the I. This is not the first age of the me. In fact, we've been stuck, us humans, in the age of the me for thousands of years. And so this morning, meet King Herod, the king of me. Matthew chapter 2, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and we've come to worship him." You can see straight away in that reading, can't you, that we've got a problem on our hands because we've got King Herod and we've got people who've just arrived in King Herod's domain who are seeking another king. And so in the very beginning of this passage, battle lines are drawn. The Magi are reaching out for a king of the Jews in a land in which there is already a king of the Jews. And his name is Herod. And Herod has been called the king of the Jews for almost 40 years by the time these wise men walk onto the scene. And so as they enter into the story, we must anticipate conflict. For these wise men are not looking for Herod. They're looking for a new king. So it's no wonder that verse 3 reports to us that when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. Herod clearly knows a little of what the Magi knew. There is another king, and this king will be called Messiah. Now, among the Jews of those days, the Messiah was a long-awaited God-anointed ruler who would come and triumph over all other rule in the world. Their expectation that this next king, this Messiah king, would come and bring an end to history. He would establish his kingdom over every kingdom. He would never die, and he would never lose his position of kingship. He would usurp and triumph over every power in the world. And so in that context, you can understand Herod's fear and the fear of Jerusalem with him. For Herod was a violent man, and any challenge to his power was always met with war and death and chaos. And so Herod hears that these fellows are not searching for him, not searching for some mere ordinary human successor to him. They're searching for the ultimate king, the King of Kings, the final king who's coming to end all kings. And so Herod seeks for more information. He seeks out the Jewish leaders. Verse 5, he asks them about where the Messiah is to be born. And then verse 5, in Bethlehem in Judea, they say, for this is what the prophet has written, but you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. See, that's God's promise from long, long ago. And throughout the Bible, God promises time and again that this king would come and rule the earth, but that he wouldn't rule like Herod. This promised king, this Messiah, is coming to rule with love and kindness and forever. And confirmed here for us is the fact that this ruler is indeed Jesus. And what we see is that wise men seek Jesus. They're reaching out for him. They know he's something special. They know he's destined for glory. And they know he's worth seeking out. And that's just what they do. And it's equally clear that Herod is not really a fan of this idea. And to this end, well, Herod is like many in this day and age. And if we're honest with ourselves, then we might actually say that Herod is actually quite like us. For if there's someone who's really in charge, well, it's meant to be me, isn't it? If there's someone who's really in charge, well, I don't want anyone else sort of triumphing over me. And at best, I want to pretend that he's not. And so if there's someone in the story we ought to identify with, it's actually Herod. Because we're pretty happy as we are. We don't like people challenging our power and our self-sufficiency and our self-rule. In fact, many of you would be glad to be thinking like Herod. But what he is going to discover is that trying to eliminate God from your life is both foolish and impossible. And so verse 7, Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go, search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him. Of course, it's not Herod's intention to worship this child, but to kill this child. He is self-centered and proud. He's glad to be in charge. He proclaims that he is in charge. He feels safe when he is in charge. And in that sense, he's a lot like us. But Jesus challenges Herod's power and his belief in himself and his ability to solve all problems and fix all troubles and achieve all ends. And indeed, friends, Jesus challenges our power. Jesus challenges our belief in ourselves. Jesus challenges our belief that we might be able to fix all problems and solve all troubles and achieve every end on our own strength. I suspect, like me, you were shocked and dismayed at the events that took place in Devonport over the last 2 weeks. What a horrific thing to have to endure for those families, and particularly at a moment like this. And that's not to mention all the other tragedies that have gone on in the world in the last 2 weeks. But I wonder if, as these moments sort of pass through the news cycle and pass through our lives and through our minds, I wonder if, like me, that from time to time you're also intrigued. For it's in these peak moments that you hear a slightly different narrative. You hear a slightly different call in the world. I was intrigued again by people's calls to pray. Intrigued at the calls for help somewhere beyond us. Intrigued at the recognition that sometimes there are moments. Sometimes there are events. Sometimes there are circumstances that are beyond our control. There are moments when we recognize we actually need something bigger, someone bigger. Moments when our belief in our self-sufficiency, in our self-reliance, in our self-rule is truly challenged. Moments when our reflex reaction is actually to seek for someone else because we recognize we can't do this alone. We want someone else to step in. And friends, this is precisely what God has done for us in Jesus. He stepped in. It's not often that people want their lives interrupted by Jesus, but the reality is that we need our lives to be interrupted by Him. We can't do our lives perfectly ourselves. We can't just live happily ignoring Him. If He's truly King of the world and has all things in hand, we can't go on thinking that everything's going to be okay and just push Jesus to the side. It's not. And that's why He came. And yet He's no mystical superpower that protects us from every ill. No, Jesus came to be God with us, to walk in the mess, to walk alongside us in the chaos, and to walk with us through it. And in the midst of that, Jesus came to offer hope that there is something better ahead, something beyond what we can see. He came to provide joy that lasts beyond the chocolate buzz that many of the children are already on this morning and the champagne fizz that perhaps some of the adults will be on this afternoon. He came to offer forgiveness for life not lived well, for regrets, for guilty pleasures, for the ways that we've contributed to family dramas, for the way we've tried to live life pretending God isn't in charge or isn't really there, even though He is. And so today is an invitation. As we remember that Jesus has stepped into the world, today is an invitation, perhaps for the first time, for you to acknowledge that you do need something beyond yourself to do life well in the world. You do need someone to guide you through and show you the way. You do need someone like the wise men did. And perhaps today is a good day for you to come to Jesus, just like they did, and to find forgiveness and hope and life. After they'd heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they'd seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed, and on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. And they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. Now, this is not a call that we might bring gifts to try and gain God's pleasure. In fact, it's remarkably and wonderfully the reverse. A God, instead of wanting us to beg with Him or plead with Him or please Him through our religion or deeds or good behavior, God has acted already in a completely gracious and loving way in this very scene. He does not call us to give to Him and meet His standard. No, He has given to us what we need in Jesus, the baby in the manger, so that we might be saved, forgiven, full of joy and hope and promise that this life is not all there is, and that indeed a delightful, joyful eternity awaits. So you may have come in this morning not realizing this, not realizing that Jesus is what you wanted for Christmas. I hope you go out knowing that Jesus is what you need this Christmas. He is who you need this Christmas. And not just this Christmas, but every day. He is a gift of greater delight and greater joy than anything you might imagine. And through Jesus, God is drawing outsiders in. Outsiders like you and me. This child king, this Christ, this Jesus was the one promised who would come to forgive people for all their past wrongs and free them for a future of glory and joy. And so the wise men came to Jesus and they placed their lives at his service and under his rule, and they received his grace and mercy. And they're not the only ones expected to do so. Indeed, at Christmas we see the wise men seek Jesus. And this Christmas I want to tell you that wise people still seek Jesus. And so God calls you this day to come and receive from him what you need. To come, let us adore him, Christ the Lord. Amen. Have a great Christmas day, and I look forward to seeing you at some other time during the year. Amen.